You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Join the conversation.
What is this spat all about between Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan and the Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane? It's becoming very, very confusing. And if you are honest, you might have intuitions about who's right, regardless of the issues. You probably go, the PP is useless and corrupt. I don't trust her. Whatever Pravin is saying, I'm on his side. Or you might go, I don't like that guy for whatever reason. Let's say for argument's sake, you are Julius. Then you will go, yeah, whatever it is, he's up to nonsense again. And because the media love him to bits, they're not going to give the PP a fair hearing. Well, the question is, what is fact? What is fiction? What are the legal issues? And I can't think of a better journalist to explain it all to us and specialist reporter from Tees of Black Star, Karen Morn, who is here with me in studio. Good morning, Karen, and thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the year and now, and then we'll go back into the past. When does she want to have a little bit of a conversation with Pravin? Is it today, tomorrow?
It's tomorrow. She has subpoenaed him, so of course he's compelled to come and answer her questions. He will go to her office, and we will see from there on how this thing moves. Interestingly enough, it's come across in her statements that this is actually not kind of a formal investigation at this stage. It's a preliminary investigation. So she, on her version, is still determining, you know, whether she pursues this or if there is a basis to pursue this. And I think, you know, that kind of decision making for her will be quite interesting given the whole controversy that surrounded this issue.
And what is the thing that this is a preliminary investigation to a possible full future investigation about? What is that thing?
Well, you know, it's quite unusual because, I mean, I know it's very strange that this whole thing has been ventilated in the first place. It normally wouldn't. Of course, it came to the fore because the minister disclosed it in his affidavit to the Zondo Commission, where he said that, you know, he very much, in the minister's own words, has painted it as part of a kind of a campaign of persecution that he has articulated himself as suffering as a consequence of him standing up on his version against the project of state capture. So this whole thing emerged in the affidavit as part of this campaign to undermine him and to, you know, and linked to the SARS case, which was dropped against him by Sean Abrams. And he sort of linked those two together because it involves pretty much the same subject matter. So it came out into the public discourse in that way. The public protector then sought to defend herself and said, this has got nothing to do with the timing of the Zondo Commission inquiry. I'm just doing this preliminary investigation, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and suggested that he'd ignored her. We've seen her lawyer responding over the weekend that that's simply not true. But the whole thing has kind of evolved into somewhat of a hot mess, which is worsened by the fact that she is in the Constitutional Court on the 27th of November to defend herself, to both try and challenge the 900,000 Rand costs order that was granted against her personally in the Saab matter, on the grounds that she could be reasonably, you know, suspected of bias in her investigation and did not appear to understand her constitutional mandate to operate without fair favor. But also, you know, the Reserve Bank bringing a counter application that it failed at in the High Court to say that she should be found guilty of abusing her office. If that finding is made, Parliament will be under huge pressure to persist with that inquiry into her fitness to hold office.
Let's set that aside. So what is the nexus issue that she wants to explore tomorrow? Is this in relation to that early retirement thingamajig? And if so, take us back to what the core question there was.
Okay, so it's very important to remember that the Pravin Gordhan criminal case came about when, you know, those 22 questions, he was finance minister, those 22 questions from the Hawks were leaked. You know, there were clear attempts to link him to the so-called SARS rogue unit, which then transmogrified into him being charged for, you know, his involvement in the early retirement payout that was given to SARS Commissioner Ivan Pillay. And the allegation from the NPA was that this, because, and then Pillay was subsequently reappointed. this constituted fraud. It was a criminal offense. They must have known, obviously, that this was illegal, et cetera, et cetera. Sean Abrams comes before the nation, says such things as the days of disrespecting the NPR are over, very much goes out to bat for the prosecutors who'd made the decision to prosecute Pravin Gordhan. Despite the fact that there was no evidence that the NPA had, in fact, ever prosecuted anyone over an early retirement thing of this nature, particularly in circumstances where Gordhan had not financially benefited at all from this. Anyway, fast forward 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks later, this very same Abrams is coming before South Africa and saying, well, actually, there was a memo from the legal advisor, Flock Symington, who, of course, we all know famously held hostage in the offices, etc., linked to the whole Tom Oyane mess, where he actually got legal advice and he said to them, this is legal. So with that memo, all kind of criminal mens rea, you know, criminal intent went out the window, because the argument then is, well, this person thought they were acting legally. They got advice. They didn't think they were breaking the law. So the whole very crucial aspect of mens rea, that balloon is deflated immediately. So criminal prosecution right off the table. Subsequently to that, we see Sean Abrams writing very angry letters to Bernie Ntlemeza, then head of the Hawks, suggesting that he had acted in a male fide way and withheld this evidence from the NPA. And this had led it to making a poor decision. Anyway, now this very same matter around the early retirement is referred to the public protector by Deputy President David Mabuza's speech writer, who's very unhappy about the fact that his name has been brought into this whole thing. And she says, look, I'm not investigating criminality or the potential, you know, potential criminal investigation. I'm looking at maladministration and misuse of public funds. Because this was money that, you know, should have not been spent. And that's the kind of thing that I'm looking at. It's a very different kettle of fish.
I find that fascinating. And I know that the public protector in many quarters is not a very popular person. I don't think that she's the best, and that's me being euphemistic. But if we set aside questions about her integrity, her history, the case before, the court at the moment that you have reminded us of, Karen, I'm really fascinated legally by this distinction between the scope of what the NPA might have looked into and abandoned in relation to the early retirement deal, and this question of maladministration, because it's an opportunity here for us to learn as well about what the scope of the work, at least in theory, is of the public protector. Is there an area of the oversight role in terms of the Public Protector Act that legitimately, notwithstanding motive, allows the PP to sometimes raise questions about the ethical use or the responsible use of public monies that may not be a question that is a question that the NPA may pursue in regard to its mission?
That's at the heart of what the public protector does, is looking at issues of maladministration. So you can have officials, functionaries, for instance, in Kandla is a classic case where, that entire project, there have been sort of subsequent criminal investigations that haven't gone anywhere. But the primary finding was that there was kind of gross maladministration. Maladministration is, you know, when you are as a government functionary, you are in charge of public money. And you need to, you know, adhere to the rules of the Public Finance Management Act. You need to do, I mean, when it comes to tenders, for example, is your tender process fair? Is it competitive? If it's not, you know, that can also be criminal, but certainly it's a form of maladministration because you have not administered the system around tenders properly. You haven't done the due diligence. You haven't found the best person, the most competitive bid. You haven't followed the process adequately. So that issue of it's not criminality, it's maladministration. I mean, the maladministration aspect is key to her position, and it's defined a number of the public protector's investigations over the years. It's one of the most often made findings in terms of her investigations.
So why has the correspondence between them, on the face of it, taken such an ugly turn in terms of tonality?
Well, it's very clear that Minister Gordhan does not regard this as a legitimate investigation. He has said that in his affidavit to the Zondo Commission. I think what happened with the Reserve Bank has certainly, you know, because he would have been well aware of that entire drama with the CX report and trying to force Absa to pay back 1.2 billion rand. You know, one can assume. But I think, you know, that kind of, now that we know that that is his attitude and we do know from his affidavit, I think that kind of puts a hue on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the correspondence, his attorney, Tebogo Malatsi, saying, you know, we want to see the evidence that you have against the minister. He has been cleared of these things. So we want the evidence before, you know, we respond to the questions. But I think that, you know, they obviously need to ventilate that more fully. But certainly, because a criminal investigation has been closed, I don't necessarily think you can close the door to a maladministration investigation.
So Praveen is not against, even if his fans are, he's not against being subpoenaed and speaking to the PP. But it's a case of, okay, I will submit myself to your processes, but the public must know that this is a witch hunt. That's basically what's going on here.
Yeah, and I mean, I think
On his version.
The difficulty is that, you know, there have been a lot of questions around the public protector's fitness to hold office in the wake of the Saab decision. I mean, the court did stop shy of saying that she abused her office, but it did say if, for instance, the Reserve Bank brought another application, that that could be considered by the court. We also have, you know, Helen Ziller challenging the tweet decision, which has also been legally criticized. The initial recommendation that she made in the Saab report that the constitution be altered to, you know, alter the mandate of the Reserve Bank. I mean, you know, you don't even have to be a law student to know that that was a you know, completely legally unsound decision to make. She's on review for her Estina investigation with CASAC and the DA and a number of. So she is facing a number of profound, quite legal challenges on a number of fronts. And as yet, she hasn't come out of any of those situations being, you know, determined to be victorious.
Seem to be, from an analysis point of view, the whole spiel doesn't seem to be that murky in terms of how we must understand it. So there are credibility questions that hang over her head.
Mm.
There is politics at play here, quite clearly. You'd have to be naive not to think so. And yet, at the same time, there are, in terms of a narrow reading, but an important and accurate reading of the scope of her powers, some legitimate questions that she can raise in relation to maladministration.
Absolutely. She is the public protector. She is the public protector. Until such time as she's removed, she's in that office. And we've seen, you know, Thuli Madonsela went, you know, with the Nkandla report. The Constitutional Court has pronounced upon the powers of the public protector, and in that judgment, you know, saying that she was kind of the David of the country, that she's a person who's meant to hold public, you know, people with power to account. Now, whatever her motives are, at this stage, she's in that position. She hasn't been removed.
100%.
And so, you know, I think that, you know, one needs to be very wary about just saying, well, you know, we all just get to ignore her because, you know, there may be certain narratives about her bias or whatever. Until such time as she's removed, she's in that position and she does have these powers. And I think, you know, the minister is going to go and speak to her tomorrow. And I think there is an acknowledgement through that action. He's not trying to defy that. He is actually going to answer the questions.
20 minutes after 10, 10 minutes, quick questions for Karen. I think she is as lucid as she always is, but maybe there's another question that I didn't ask her that is foremost on your mind in relation to this matter. 021-446-0567. You can ask it of her, or you can put an opinion. We can also agree to disagree on some issues, because some of this stuff is also a matter of how you see what is at play here and isn't a perfect science. Bianca, I'm going to come to your call. You can also tweet us what you're thinking. Bakululu Nale is having a similar thought as I had. But sometimes I do occasionally keep my thoughts to myself, saying, love how Karen is growing my vocab. Transmogrify. transform in a surprising or magical manner.
Eusebius MacKaiser. Eusebius MacKaiser. On 702 and Cape Talk.
If you've just joined us, we're hanging out with specialist TESOR Black Star reporter Karen Morn, who is helping to explain to us what exactly is going on in this matter currently between Pravin Gordhan and the public protector. Take a couple of calls from our listeners, Karen, and see whether we can help them understand it even better. Bianca, good morning, and thank you so much for calling in today. Do you have a question or a comment?
Hey, can you hear me? I'm on speaker.
We can hear you very clearly. Go ahead, Bianca.
Okay. Hi, you see this, and hi, Karen. Hi. First, I've got 3 points. The first one is the Tilly Madam Sela is actually the epitome of what the role of a public protector should be in this country and why the role was created. And what she focused on was within the correct parameters of what the role entails. This public protector is actually a public neglecter. That is my view, a very strong one. The other question I have is, has anyone ever looked into her actual qualifications? Because there are glaring irregularities in her CV. If you have a look at things, you'll notice that she got an LLB within 2 years of matriculating. An LLB and a BSoc, in fact. And I'm not quite sure what her role as an advocate was at all. If you look very carefully, her CV is available online with all the other candidates that were interviewed for the job. She definitely has a lot of questions to answer in that regard. It is impossible to finish an LLB, which is an honours degree, within that amount of time. So that could explain a lot of problems that we are facing now coming out of her office, because most of it does not appear to show any legal acumen whatsoever.
Okay, what's your third point? Have you forgotten it?
Well, the third point is she's focusing on... I'm not trying to trivialise maladministration or fraudulent payments, whatever the case may be. That must be addressed. However, I think she's abusing her office in focusing on new things that are greater issues that her department should be focused on.
Okay. The first question is simply a shout out to Thuli. I know that Karen shares your view, as do I. Thuli's the gold standard. Let's move away from Thuli. The qualifications, have we had any reason to suspect that the public protector is not formally qualified or lied about her CV?
Well, one would assume that... you know, she would have been vetted as part of that process. But we know that the DA was making noise about her working for the SSA, the State Security Agency, and that they have suggested, remember, they said it pretty much explicitly called her a spy. And she then threatened to sue them for defamation. I don't know if they actually, she has in fact done so. But they certainly have raised issues about, you know, where exactly, you know, if she is exactly what she professes herself to be. But as far as I know, there hasn't been any kind of substantive investigation into that.
The final point that Bianca made, and funny enough, people who did not like Thuli Madam Sela had a similar complaint that there are more important things to worry about. And Advocate Madam Sela kept telling people, yeah, sure, the biggest media focus might be on these big political cases, but numerically, the vast majority of work that my staff are engaged with involve Gogo Dlamini. Can the current public protector say the same, that most of what she actually does on a day-to-day basis is not go after the likes of Pravin Gordhan? So we just don't know the full gamut.
Well, she has, you know, she did all those road shows where she went to like deep rural areas and tried to, you know, kind of address the very specific issues that were within those communities. Mm. And I think she would argue that she is doing her utmost. I mean, remember, of course, that when complaints are made to her around, you know, specifically not in this particular case, but like violations of the Executive Members Ethics Act, she is compelled by law to finalise those investigations within kind of a limited time frame. And these are
so
not
this,
complaints
this
that are...
To Gordhan. This was not self-initiated, like you've already indicated. Someone complained?
Yes. It was the deputy president's spokesperson, speechwriter, Mr. Huveka, who's also issued a statement saying that Pravin Gordhan naming him as the complainant in this was a violation of his rights and has put his life in jeopardy.
Ketiwe, good morning.
Morning.
Have you got a question, Ketiwe, or a comment?
I think my 2 cents worth in this whole public protector saga is that she's just either incompetent or captured and still pursuing this state capture project. I think on this investigation on Pravin Gordhan, she's really going on a frolic that's frivolous, vexatious, and malicious against Pravin Gordhan. It was if she's complaining about Pile, how Pile was brought back into SARS after having taken an early retirement. How many bureaucrats in the previous administration and even in the current administration that have gone back to various ministries or departments to become advisors and counselors? Is she going to go after all of them?
Very good questions, Katie. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Karen. I've deliberately tried to be nice to the PP by explaining how if one wanted to be stickless on the law and the Public Protector Act, a defense of her is possible in theory on this particular matter. But two questions, one fact and one your opinion. On the factual question, can she decline to investigate? Because presumably if 200 people were to email her every second of the day, it wouldn't be practically possible. And then secondly, do you think this is vexatious, even if the Act permits her to have a little bit of a chat?
Well, I think that Gordon's situation is interesting because she's in a preliminary investigation. So it is very possible that she interviews him. He provides an explanation, says, you know, X, Y, Z, this is the advice that I got. Here it is. We thought that this was, you know, and provides an explanation that she's satisfied with. And she says, look, I don't think there's a basis for me to continue with an investigation. And she informs the complainant in that matter. And what was the second question?
Do you think that she's doing an honest day's job, or is it vexatious? And it's speculative because this goes to questions of motive, obviously.
Listen, she has been found to show that there could be a reasonable apprehension of bias in terms of her Saab investigation. That investigation was at the heart of the kind of rhetorical battle between so-called white monopoly capital and state capture. You know, she's been accused of not disclosing meetings with the SSA, with the presidency in SSA meetings, writing notes such as how are they vulnerable in apparent reference to the Reserve Bank. She received advice from a Holocaust denialist. I think that the court, you know, in the Constitutional Court, and this is such an important case, and I hope it's televised because I think it's one of the pivotal ones. On the same day that Trevor Manuel's supposed to give evidence to the state capture inquiry, but the pivotal question of that case is this person a biased person? Does the judgment, or is there a reasonable apprehension of bias? Because I think that bias aspect is at the heart of the kind of allegations that we're seeing surfacing in the Gordon matter. They need to be settled for once and for all, and Parliament needs to finalise this inquiry into her fitness to hold office, for the sake of her office, for the sake of her, and for the South African public.
I'm just going to steal an extra minute just to reflect on the principles at stake here. It's very hard for all of us, right, as citizens, to enter these kinds of issues in a dispassionate manner. If you don't like Maluti Gupta, then you won't raise questions about the PP's motives as you wait for the president to rebuke him in some form by tomorrow. If you like Pravin, then suddenly we want to ask questions about the CV of the PP.
Interesting enough, Malusi Gigaba was one of the strongest critics of Mkhwebane in the Saab matter. He wrote a very, very scathing affidavit in which he came after her in a big way. And I think your point is very, very, very pertinent. Rule of law is rule of law, whether it's your favorite or it's someone that you despise. That's what protects all of us in a constitutional democracy. Because if rules are applied equally to everyone, all of us are equally pursued when we should be, and all of us are equally protected when we should be. And that's a standard that we have to hold to everyone, including the people we don't like.
Absolutely. Specialist reporter for TESOL Black Star, Karen Morn, thanks so much for coming in.